we've come to a really important and exciting part of our program, and that is the presentation of the Alfred E. Kahn Award for Antitrust Achievement. It was first presented in 2000, very early in AAI's career in the advocacy world, and is our longest standing award and representative, perhaps most representative of our organization's progressive mission to promote vigorous antitrust enforcement and comprehensive competition policy. The award honors and celebrates an individual for their outstanding contributions to the field of antitrust. That's all it is. It's very simple and very straightforward, but very weighty. Senator Blumenthal is the 23rd recipient of the award. He will join past honorees from across the competition community, including public enforcers, private enforcers, state enforcers, legislators, academics, and policymakers. And the award really reflects Senator Blumenthal's thought leadership and legislative initiatives surrounding constructive antitrust reform, support for the antitrust laws and their enforcement at the state and federal levels, and the deep connections with the consumers and the workers and the businesses for whom antitrust enforcement is so vital. So, Senator, your work has positively changed the path of competition enforcement and really given new resonance to the importance of the antitrust laws to our economy and to our democratic institutions. Finally, I just want to add a personal note that AAI has really had the pleasure of working with your very talented staffs for many years. They are and have been an amazing, amazing group of attorneys and experts, and they ask us really hard questions on calls and in exchanges on email. And really, their quest for knowledge and understanding of the antitrust laws very much keeps us on our toes at AAI. We often have to go huddle before we respond to their questions. And those exchanges themselves have really helped us at AAI very much in our own work. And all of this, of course, is a testament to their boss's expertise and command and vision for how to invigorate antitrust enforcement and ensure that private rights of action are protected. So on behalf of AAI, Senator Blumenthal, it is my honor to present the Antitrust Achievement Award to you today, and we look forward to your remarks.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Diana. And as they say, right back at you. We've been so fortunate to have the benefit of AAI's immense expertise and knowledge, and we have really relished the partnership, and particularly personally to your enormous credibility and respect within the United States Senate, a frequent witness at our Judiciary Committee hearings, and really appreciate your insights and perspectives. And of course, the AAI has really been an institution that has helped shape our law and enforcement of our law. This award, I guess I should begin like at the Academy Awards. I want to thank my mom and my dad and my brother and, of course, my wife, Cynthia, and my four children, and my first antitrust professor at the Yale Law School, Robert Bork. I'm not joking. He was an extraordinary teacher. I actually began my interest in antitrust as a student at the Yale Law School because of its intellectual interest and challenge, but also because he made it interesting. And I mention that point because, number one, we need more good teachers of antitrust. We need more teachers who can stimulate that interest in antitrust. You know, you mentioned the word antitrust to most law school students and they sort of pale, just like you mentioned tax or the Yale Law School may not be known for its black letter teaching and case law and so forth, but it really stimulated my interest in it. And second, it's bipartisan. It should be bipartisan. It was then, and it should be now bipartisan. He was then, and as you know from his history, a pretty stalwart conservative. but he taught antitrust law pretty much without political implications. This award has tremendous meaning to me, in part because of who it's named after. As you know, Alfred Kahn was not a lawyer, and he was not an aviation industry person. He was appointed to the Civil Aeronautics Board in 1977. He saw an industry that was dominated by less than a handful of companies, and excessive rates and inept regulation. And he went to work on it, and he opened up the airline industry to competition. He was able to decrease fares and give rise to lower cost carriers. And as a result, Americans saw lower fares and more accessible routes. But his solutions were done with the law that existed at the time, and I think emphasizes to us the importance of enforcement, which has been my career pretty much until I was elected to the United States Senate, and it's one of the themes that I want to emphasize today, the importance of enforcement and, to your point, sir, resources. So if I have a message today, it is just like location, 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 resources, resources, resources. Everybody in this room knows how costly antitrust enforcement is on both sides. And maybe there are ways we can reduce those costs, and I think we should explore ways to reduce the expenses of antitrust enforcement and defense, but I think resources have to be way more than what they are right now. This award has meaning to me as well because the first recipient was my good friend Joel Klein, the partner in the Microsoft case that we brought in the 1990s, which also remains for me an example of good enforcement. And all of you may be familiar with parts and pieces of the Microsoft story, but it involved a real partnership between the federal government and between the coalition of 20 states that I helped to lead. We sought to resolve it without litigation. In fact, we spent almost a full week trying to resolve it with Microsoft, and it was done via telephone call to the West Coast because Bill Gates didn't think it was worth his coming to Washington, D.C., nor did he think it was worth really hiring a Washington, D.C. lawyer, nor did he have real lobbyists. He had one person representing Microsoft here because that world of enforcement to him was unrelated to technology, and he didn't really think it was relevant to the developing Microsoft accomplishments. And his depositions, as much as anything else, as a matter of fact, resulted in the courts concluding that Microsoft had liability. You're, I think, probably familiar with what we claimed. The case was pretty straightforward. It was a tying arrangement involving Windows and the Internet Explorer. If you want to buy a computer, that computer had to have both Windows and the Internet Explorer. It was pre-installed. Microsoft said you can't have one without the other. They won't work one without the other. And so 90% of all computers had them. And of course, Netscape Navigator tried to challenge that arrangement, but got nowhere. It came to the federal government to take up the cause of making sure that Microsoft, and I'm just going to use it out of our press release, was prevented from blocking the entrance ramps to the information superhighway. You will remember now, and I see smiles on your faces, how antiquated that saying became with repetition, and how sort of quaint it seems now. But that's what we said about it. I mention it because, for me, the main evil in this tying arrangement was, in fact, to block innovation. And, of course, this world thrives on innovation more than anything else. And innovation is the benefit to consumers of competition in this technology world. But the company was using this tying arrangement to box out rivals and to block innovation. It was not a popular lawsuit, I will tell you right now. We brought the lawsuit, which sort of came out of nowhere for a lot of people. After all, they were using these devices. They were happy using these devices. They had no idea what Microsoft was doing. They had no idea what antitrust law was or tying arrangement. They just knew they were happy with what they had, and it wasn't any additional charge to them financially to have this tying arrangement. But Microsoft said, we're saving you money. So we brought the lawsuit, and I remember flying back on the plane, and the next day having a press conference on something else, and I was deluged with questions, why are you denying consumers the benefits of the Internet Explorer and Windows in this way? Again, antitrust is not necessarily popular. We think of antitrust enforcers as the trust busters from that era of the smoke-filled rooms. But in this world of technology, the evils are often difficult to illustrate or even to describe in ways that are persuasive to consumers. And I found this fact to be true, not only in Microsoft, but even in the pharmaceutical industry, where we sued some of the companies for pay-to-delay schemes, where we sued some of the other big industries on antitrust grounds. By the way, we sued the tobacco companies, one of our counts in our lawsuit. I'm very proud to have insisted that we sue on antitrust grounds as well as consumer protection grounds when we went against the big tobacco companies, a suit that eventually we won through a settlement that guaranteed billions of dollars and changes in advertising practices and an end to the deceptive claims by the tobacco companies that their product was perfectly safe, didn't cause any diseases. You'll remember the ads where a doctor in a white coat said Chesterfields are good for people. Well, those ads were the result of collusion and not even, you know, the kind of subtle collusion. They actually got together in a smoke-filled room to collude on those health claims. But the public doesn't necessarily understand antitrust law and the way that it harms them, particularly when it comes to technology. Microsoft was a well-liked company. Bill Gates was heralded as a visionary, and the lawsuit that we brought resulted in a finding of liability. The question then was what the remedies should be, and the judge, Judge Jackson, concluded the company ought to be broken up. The Justice Department felt otherwise, and the Court of Appeals agreed with the Department of Justice. But I think the effect of the lawsuit ultimately was positive. The irony is it was, in my view, certainly a positive for Microsoft. And I will just conclude my mention of Microsoft on a personal note. Ultimately, the states settled after the Justice Department. We got a little bit more. And the person who settled the case with me was Brad Smith. And I want to give a big shout out to him, because after staunch resistance, beginning from the time when Bill Gates refused to talk substantively or seriously with the Department of Justice or with us, Brad Smith took over, and in a very businesslike and lawyerly fashion, decided to settle the case on terms that I think were a net plus for Microsoft as well as for consumers. Now, as much as we value enforcement and we need more resources, we also need some changes in the law, in my view. There are proposals now on the floor of the Senate, two bills specifically, both reported out of the Judiciary Committee with overwhelming support. And when I say overwhelming, I mean maybe 3-2 votes against. One is the Open App Markets Act, which I have co-sponsored, bipartisan. My partner in this effort is Senator Blackburn of Tennessee, enormously productive working relationship with her. She's the ranking member as well on the Consumer Protection Subcommittee, which I chair. We've produced a bill called the Kids Online Safety Act, which protects kids against the toxic content that's driven to them by social media sites and algorithms, the black box algorithms that are secret to everyone by social media. This bill would give more transparency to those algorithms, and it would give parents tools to stop the content on eating disorders, bullying, other really bad stuff that is repeatedly driven to them by the algorithms that thrive on data that is collected by big tech. And I mentioned that bill, even though it's different from the Open App Markets Act, because what's common to both of them is collection of data. As all of you know, consumers are the product. They are literally, their data is what makes big tech so profitable. And what we try to do in the Open App Markets Act is bust the monopolistic grip that Apple has on access to apps. In other words, the App Store, app developers have to go through Apple, and they're charged 30%, 20%. Apple has refused to waive it. It is, in effect, you know, I was the U.S. attorney in Connecticut. We did organized crime cases. Some of those cases against organized crime over the years have involved sports betting. Organized crime took what's called a VIG, which is a commission. I note there are not nods of recognition throughout the House, but this 30 or 20%, in my view, is a kind of VIG. You know, you want to play the game, you pay us. And that's what they've done on the App Store. And by forbidding those kinds of charges, very, in my view, fairly limited kind of bill, there would be lower fees, this is a financial consequence, to online purchases and less capitalization on the consumer data that is scavenged in that way. Now, Senator Klobuchar has a bill with Senator Grassley. It's also bipartisan, and it is called the American Innovation and Choice Online Act, which would stop self-preferencing in services and products by big tech. And all of you know the way that works in terms of, in effect, elevating Google's own map services to the top of preferences. So that's the one that's selected. And I think both of these are really, they epitomize what antitrust law should do, which is to level the playing field, give equal access, let consumers choose without encumbrances and eventually lower costs and create better products, innovation. And that's what new apps would do if they have that kind of access. I'm impressed, and I think we are fortunate in having a new set of enforcers who can take these new laws, but also existing laws, and use them more effectively. Jonathan Cantor, who took over as the chief antitrust enforcer in DOJ, has said, if antitrust agencies, quote, don't go to court, you're a regulator, not an enforcer, end quote. And I think that's an encouraging sign. The Justice Department has brought an important case against Google for monopolizing the search and online advertising spaces. And the FTC has done the same against Facebook for suppressing competition from rivals. Those signs are really encouraging. But I think what the American public is beginning to understand is how impactful the dominance of monopolistic power can be in airlines. Again, seeing the retrenchment that Alfred Kahn wanted in that industry, seeing the consolidation that has occurred so that now just a handful of airlines dominate many of the most popular routes. In many other industries, oil and gas, obviously there are many reasons for that monopolization having to do with the barriers to entry and so forth. But there's also the possibility that there could be more competition in many of these industries, including the pharmaceutical drug industry. And on an antitrust note, not really directly antitrust, but Senator Cornyn and I have a bill that would stop the product hopping and patent thicketing that involves misuse of patents and thereby creates barriers to the entry and competition of generics and others that could offer consumers more choices. And just to conclude, baby formula. In a matter of minutes, literally, the Subcommittee on Antitrust of the Judiciary Committee will begin a hearing on baby formula and how the fact that Abbott's 40%, the four largest companies controlling 90% of the market, aggravated, exacerbated, and maybe even caused some of the problems. Now, I would be the first to tell you that the dominance of those four companies of the market didn't alone create this crisis. As a matter of fact, I've called for a whistleblower, an IG investigation, Inspector General investigation of FDA, and the suppression of the whistleblower report that called attention to this problem much earlier than was disclosed. Obviously, the problems of contamination, the failure of the FDA to act more promptly, and, by the way, the fact that many of the WIC agreements, the SNAP-WIC agreements, are sole source. So, in effect, the United States government excluded competition in a part of the market that composes more than half, I think it's 60%, of all the sales of infant formula. So the federal government is not necessarily blameless in the ways that power accretes or accumulates in these industries. But I do think that the way that the federal government can be most important in this area is working to enforce better, more reliably, more vigorously the powers that it has, and to support reforms in the law that are timely and important and potentially impactful. We're not going to have an antitrust law that throws out the Sherman Act or the Clayton Act or any of the existing law. It's not just going to be leveled. It will be incremental. That's the way legislation, as you know, the way legislation often occurs is what we're trying to do right now on gun violence reform, where the goal is very simply to save lives, not that we're going to achieve everything we want, far less than what I want, but these measures, limited in scope, can truly help save lives. They could be real and meaningful, and I think reform of our antitrust laws can be real and meaningful in the lives of everyday Americans and ultimately help us all educate people about how antitrust law is important to them. Thanks very much for this award. Really means a lot to me. And I will just finish by saying, Diana, you're absolutely right about my staff. They're a lot smarter, more knowledgeable than I am. And this award is a recognition of the great work that they do, and as well the very collegial partnerships I have with